This episode is brought to you by Boncharge. Are you stressed out? Do your muscles ache? Are you looking for a way to get better sleep? Well then, Boncharge is for you. What's Boncharge? Boncharge is a company that makes an infrared sleeping bag that is serving as a sauna. I'll say that again. It's an infrared sleeping bag that actually acts as an in-home sauna. You plug it in, it heats up, you lay down inside of it, you do absolutely nothing, you get a sick sweat session in, you calm down, you decompress, life is easy. You get out, you dry off, you unplug it, you dry your infrared, your little sleeping bag off, you put it away, and you're done. If you want to get the benefits of this all in your house without having to go to a spa, without having to go to a resort, or go to some nasty, disgusting gym and get into their sauna that you don't even know how well they're cleaning it, just go. I'm gonna just not even going to give you a website. Just Google Boncharge. That's Boncharge. That's Boncharge. And if you put in the code Mahoney, Mahoney, that's Mahoney, you will get 15% savings. If you can't remember any of this, don't worry. It'll be in the show notes. Just click on the link right in the show notes. All right, enjoy the rest of your day. Bye. Welcome to another episode of 6 Minute Monday, where I give you 6 tips and tricks to make you more efficient and effective in the weight room, the boardroom, and on a football field. And I'll give you a recap of what happened at this week's Money in the Bank Challenge. So here we go. Tip number one, it is something that I've listened to that's moved me. It was a podcast episode with Bill Parisi on Eric Cressy's Sports Performance Podcast. Now, Bill Parisi, he's the Bill Parisi of Parisi Speed School, and he was talking to Eric Cressy about fascia. So you might be asking yourself, what is fascia? I'm just going to read what I Googled. Fascia is a thin casing of connective tissue that surrounds and holds every organ, blood vessel, bone, nerve fiber, and muscle in place. I'll say that one more time. It's a thin casing of connective tissue that surrounds and holds every organ, blood vessel, bone, nerve fiber, and muscle in place. Now, you might say, who cares? And why is this important? Well, when you do things like foam rolling, that's something called SMR, that is self-myofascial release. When you use your Theragun, in some instances, that is another form of self-myofascial release. I'm probably overly simplifying it. I definitely am, but I'm just giving you examples of things that you may be doing where you think, I'm working out my muscles, but sometimes you are releasing pain or tension in your fascia. So Bill Parisi was talking about fascia, and he was explaining why it's so important. And he compared it to when you lay down concrete. You lay down concrete, you mix it on the ground. If you keep it wet, it'll stay moist, and it will never solidify. But once you stop that concrete from mixing and moving it around, it's now going to become this solid foundation like the sidewalk you're walking on. Now, I'm still on tip number one, and you still may be saying, who cares? But the point is that your fascia, if you do not keep it lubricated, and if you do not keep it moving in large ranges of motion, you're going to become immobile. I remember DeFranco saying that as his father started working out longer and longer, it took him longer and longer to warm up. He almost said he had to, like, break the concrete off his body before he started to actually get into his real exercises. Well, that's the case. As you get older, and if you stop moving as much, and if you stop hydrating your fascia, if you stop getting blood flow to it, or even just hydrating your body in general, then it's going to be really hard for you to get into a good squat position. It's going to be hard for you to deadlift. It's going to be hard for you to move. It's going to be hard for you to pick up your kid or your grandkid, whatever it is. So Bill Parisi was talking about this as part of his conversation, and it genuinely did move me. Which leads me to tip number two, which is an exercise tip, was that at the beginning of your exercise, and this is something that we've done forever, at the beginning of your exercise, you want to get a series of jumps in at the beginning of that exercise. Now, at advanced training, when I coached high school football, still do, at the beginning of our workouts, we always jumped rope. We did something to get the central nervous system going. What I didn't realize was that by doing those jumps, repeated jumps, it also lubricated the fascia. I'm using lubricated again as an overly simplistic term, but maybe it activated the fascia in the bottom of your feet. So that is the tip that I'm giving you. At the beginning of your workout, incorporate jumps. Now, our crew, we do it outside before we sprint. We do these little pogo hops. When I'm in a gym, we jump rope. And then also, the benefit, maybe like an added benefit, would be to do this without shoes on. Even if you have zero shoes on. I was in a hotel gym this past week. I took my shoes off, even though I have zero shoes. And I did my jumps without shoes on. And it felt insane. Like, I felt something different, not only in the workout, but for the rest of the day. I felt this insane activation in my feet. So those are the first two tips. Tip number one, Well, that's what I've heard. That's Move Me was talking about fascia. Tip number two, it was a little tip for you, is to jump at the beginning of your workout, preferably without shoes on. If you can do it without socks, go ahead, but it's probably pretty gross in the gym that you're at. Okay, the other thing I want to say is, and I heard this a couple times, is that fascia has 8 times more proprioceptors than your muscles. I'm having trouble saying proprioceptors, but essentially your proprioceptors actually help you understand movement, connection, reactivity. It gives you feeling between you and the ground, maybe you and an opponent if they're pushing on you. So again, once I did those jumps, I really felt extremely more connected, and I felt like for the rest of the day, I was just moving around a lot better. Okay, tip number three, something I am experimenting with. Sorry, getting a little congested here. I experimented with buying slightly oversized toe socks. Now, why would I do that? Well, I really believe that when I wear socks that separate my toes out, where it's not like a traditional socks where you put your toe inside of a sleeve, again, I just feel better all day. I feel like there's a little bit to separate the toes while I'm walking. I feel like I get more blood flow to my feet. But why wouldn't I do it? Because I have really big fat toes, and it usually takes me a long time to get my toes into each one of those sleeves. But when I bought these slightly oversized toe socks, it was a lot easier to get in. It would legitimately cut my time in half of getting them in. So I'm experimenting with it now. I haven't run in them yet. I want to see if I can run in them without them slipping off. If they do not fall off, I'll be buying them in bulk. I'll be throwing out all of my other socks, which may be a productivity tip for you. I'll get rid of all of them. I only want one type of sock. I don't want to have to mix and match socks while I'm doing my laundry. But that is more to come, and hopefully this thing works out. Okay, tip number four, a quote that I'm thinking about. I am 100% right until the moment I feel I am not. I'll say that one again. I am 100% right until the moment I feel I am not. Now, what does that quote mean? Well, to me it meant is that when you believe in something, you believe in something. You give your heart and your soul to that thing. And you fully dive into that, and you live it like it's your badge of honor. But you cannot be so close-minded that you're never willing to think or explore to see if you're wrong, to constantly try and prove yourself wrong. But when you believe it, you believe it. It's kind of this awesome dynamic balance, this dichotomy of believing totally in something and giving your life to it, but also having the intelligence to be able to figure out and be open-minded enough to say, am I right or am I wrong on this, and continuously improve yourself. Okay, tip number five. It's a productivity tip. I gave you one already. The one I gave you was, don't get like 100 different pairs of socks. It just makes doing laundry a nightmare. And just, I'm going to do it. If these socks work, I'm throwing all my old socks out, and I'm just going to use these. The other productivity tip. I read this one in a book called The Unstoppable You by John C. Maxwell. And it has to do with not managing your time, but managing your energy level. And one thing that he said was, you cannot be like 100% of your peak energy all day long. There's going to be peaks and valleys. Basically, this is another thing I heard from Ravel Navakot. He said, when you work, you got to work like a lion, not like a cow. So when you work, you want to take long periods of breaks and then go in 100 miles an hour. Take long periods of breaks and then go in 100 miles an hour. Well, it's the same thing with respect to your own work and energy levels. You got to know and map out when you're going to need to go 100 miles an hour. Maybe a lion doesn't know when this gazelle is going to walk in front of him, but he knows when he's going to go hunting, right? He knows when he's going to go creeping. Well, for you, you should map out your day and map out the times where you need to be on. Maybe this, for me, it's this podcast right now. I need to be on. Maybe while I'm reading a book, I could be low. Maybe while I'm watching TV tonight with my wife, I could be low. But right now, while I'm making this podcast, I got to be on. So that's the time where I want to keep that energy reserve ready to go. Okay, tip number six, the craziest thing that I saw all week, there'll be two. One was, maybe it's something someone else saw all week. It was me sprinting through the streets of Costa Rica. Now, what's the big deal? Well, there was no park around. I had no easy access to getting to a park, and I needed to keep my sprinting going. So I found a nice hill on the streets of Costa Rica. But what I did not know was in the area that I was, you were not allowed to run on the street. You were allowed to run on the sidewalk, but not on the street. So the security, I don't know what they were. Maybe they were police. I have no idea. But they had told me, not through English, but just kind of pointing, that I was not to be running where I was running. So I had to take my sprinting to the sidewalk. Okay. I don't know. I thought it was interesting. But the weirdest thing I saw was I was in bed. I get up. Let's say I went to bed at 8:30. I get up around 10:30. Wasn't feeling right. I was tossing and turning. Went downstairs. Slept downstairs. I wake up at 11 o'clock p.m. to like this clicking. I'm like, what is going on? What it is Mrs. Mahoney weighing herself on two separate scales. She's walking from one scale to another scale. One scale to another scale in our living room, right next to our couch. Now, you could pick out one of the weirdest parts of the story. One, that I left bed to go downstairs, sleep on the couch. Maybe not so weird. Two, that she is now also up at 11 o'clock. Three, that we have two scales. Four, that we have two scales in our living room. And maybe five, why is she doing weighing herself at 11 o'clock between two separate scales? I'll fill in some of the blanks. She has trouble sleeping. That's why she's up at 11 o'clock at night. Why do we have two scales? Because she is really serious into her keto diet and has now been weighing herself repeatedly at different parts of the day, but also wondering if our scale is broken. So she brought a second scale to see if there was a difference. And then, for whatever reason, she decided to test it out at 11 p.m. in our living room between the new scale and the old scale. By the way, for people that weigh themselves, as I used to do about five times a day and no longer do, the scales were both off. They weren't the same weight. And sometimes, one scale weighed heavier than the other scale. Yeah, that means both. Like, one was high, and then the next time it was low. One time it was high, one next time it was low. It was never like it was consistently high. So these scales weren't even consistent in their variation. I think they'd be called that gauge R&R in the Six Sigma world. So the bottom line is, you really can't live and die by the scale. So there was a lot to that there, but that was what was going on in the Mahoney house. So those were the six tips and tricks from 6 Minute Monday, and I'm going to get into what happened at this weekend's tag team challenge, Money in the Bank challenge. So as you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, we have tag team events every week, but every now and again, we like to break out the Money in the Bank challenge. So what's the Money in the Bank? Money in the Bank is, if you win this challenge, for the remainder of the season, you get one opportunity to bring the Money in the Bank, a.k.a. a belt that we have at Advanced Training that has nothing on it, just a blank belt. I took all the emblems off of it, just a blank belt. You're able to whip out that belt and do anything you want at any time during Advanced Training. Maybe you can step in on a challenge. Maybe you can get out of a challenge. Maybe you can change who the challenges are. I don't care. The only rule is that you can't hurt somebody, you can't make somebody sick, and I have to agree with what you're doing. So we hold this event where someone wins the Money in the Bank. We completely and totally stole this off of the WWE. I don't watch enough wrestling anymore. I did as a kid. I don't even know what it's done or how they do it, but all I know is my guys like it. All right. So what was the Money in the Bank challenge? The Money in the Bank challenge, I'll tell you what it was supposed to be and then what it turned out to be. What it was supposed to be was supposed to be three heats of four people. So that's three times four. There should have been 12 people in total. There was going to be three heats of four people. They were all going to do a set of sliders together every minute on the minute. And the person who came in last was out. And every on the minute we would repeat it, we would do that for three heats with four people. And then the three people that won those heats, they would go into a final round, and then with those three people go head-to-head, and again, every minute on the minute, they would do a set of sliders, and whoever came in last was out. Well, we show up to training day, and instead of having 12 people, we had five. Now, luckily, I had five sets of sliders in my bag, because there was no way to make heats with only five people. So we had five people. We had Steve Armato. We had Joe Derradita. We had Fred Carpentieri. We had Bobby Alberino, a.k.a. A-Bomb, and we had Sean Mulligan. Those were the five people. So, before we go, I tell the people with the two best attendance records in Advanced Training, that is Joe Derradita and Steve Armato, I give them a dice, and I let them roll the dice. One of the options on the dice is to be able to designate anyone at any point in any heat to have to do a single-leg slider. But no one rolled that. Would have been pretty sick. Nobody rolled that one. The other one was to be able to pick the slider that each person got. Now, some of these sliders are much older than others. Some of them have massive scratches. Some have gaping holes. So Armato, he rolls the dice, and he's able to do that. He gets to pick. He gets to pick who gets what sliders. I think he gives Bobby Alberino one with, like, side of it hanging off. Now, the truth be told, you might say, Coach, why do you have such disgusting sliders? I haven't checked them in a while, but I also do have a full pack of brand new sliders sitting in the house. I just forgot to bring them. I got them about 2 weeks ago, so this won't be that clean the next time we have a similar Money in the Bag challenge. So Armato gives the worst ones to Alberino. I don't know who he gives the rest of them to. Another option is to strategically place people on the field where you want them to do their sliders. And Joe Derradita rolled that die. He rolled that. He got to pick where people went. And when we were done, he explained why he put where people went. And it was pretty clever. So what he did was, he put himself right next to a nice red line on the field. I think they had to go about 25 yards, maybe, I can't, somewhere between 25 and 27 yards. That's what they had to do every single minute on the minute. He put himself right next to a red line to make sure he was going straight. He and our Marnell both realized that, coming into this, they were not the best slider guys that we had in the group. So Joe put himself on the red line to give himself an advantage. Then he took Alberino and Mulligan and put them really close together. Because the closer they were, they might bump into each other. Really smart. Now the last thing he did was he put Carpentieri alone on an island. Now right before this event, we all had everybody do 10-second sliders for as long as you can. And it was like a legitimate test that we do in advanced training. So if we time the clock for 10 seconds, you do as many yards as you can on a slider. Whoever gets the most amount of yards gets the most amount of points. So I'm Fred Carpentieri in that session. I'm just double checking. I'm fact checking myself right now to make sure that I am right. Give me 10 seconds as I pull this thing up. So Fred Carpentieri went and he got 23.5 yards in 10 seconds. Joe Derradina got 21 yards. Armato got 23 yards. Alberino got 27.5 yards. You can see he was the guy. And Armato got 24 yards. So, makes a lot of sense. You give Alberino the worst slider, because he was the fastest guy. And then it made a lot of sense to put Carpentieri on an island, because, yeah, Joe, he's faster than you. So here we go. We go round one, and boom! Who's out first? Fred Carpentieri comes in dead last. Now, what I realized was is that as these guys were going, they were kind of checking each other out. Where is everybody? Where is everybody? Because if no one's behind you, I'm sorry, no one's in front of you, you know you got to speed up. But there's three guys in front of you. When I say in front, I mean visually in front. You could see them because we're doing reverse sliders. If you can see people that have not gotten to where you are yet, you can kind of slow down. You can kind of slow down. It gives you a fighting chance to retain some of your energy. Fred can't see anything. He's a mile away from everybody else. He comes in dead last. He's out. So now all we have left is Mulligan, Carpentieri, Armato, Derradina. That's right. So we wait. Gets to the 1 minute mark. We go back. And now Derradina is out. Joe D is out. So now we're left with Mulligan, Carpentieri, and Armato. And for the first two rounds, Armato is sticking neck and neck with Mulligan and with Alberino. But I could see that Mulligan and Alberino, as they're going, they're like really... like, they are pacing themselves, and they are really looking at everybody else. They're trying to find this sweet spot where they can go just slow enough to not extend enough energy, but they can still win. So we go into round three, and Mulligan and Alberino look like they're shot out of a cannon, and Armato looks like he's hit his last leg. He's done. He's got nothing left in the tank. Now, what makes this highly entertaining is that while he's going and getting smoked by Alberino and Mulligan, Joe Derradina is cheering him on, acting as if he's, like, still in the hunt. I mean, these guys are, like, 15 yards away from him, and Joe Derradina's going, come on, Steve, you're still in it, Steve, you're still in it, you're still in it, come on, come on, come on. And then without missing a beat, as Alberino and Mulligan cross the finish line, without missing a beat, Joe D says, you're out, Steve, it's over. Like a loving father, a loving brother, I don't know. He just let him down gently, but it wasn't like... he's changed. Just, he didn't even, like, take a breath. He's like, come on, Steve. Come on, Steve. You're still in it. You're still in it. It's over, Steve. You're done. Like, and Steve must have looked up and said, what? How is I still in it? And then he looks up and there's 15 yards away. There's nobody there. So now it's down to Mulligan and Alberino going head to head. And the minute comes. And again, they take off like they're shot out of a cannon. They get about halfway. Alberino loses a slider. And that's all it takes. It's over, Johnny. And now... Sean Mulligan, he wins the Money in the Bank Challenge. I gotta say, guys, he might be the wrong guy to have this Money in the Bank Challenge belt in his hand. I've seen that guy. This has been like years now where people have not put him in a challenge. This guy is a CrossFit champ. Looks like a dude. I wouldn't want him to have it. So now, the dudes, they really gotta be smart about what they do or don't do with Mulligan. Because this guy is not the right guy to have the belt in his hand. Okay, so that wraps up the Money in the Bank Challenge. I'm now going to get into what may be happening at next week's challenge. I'm not 100% sure yet. It's been a quick turnaround. I got home from Costa Rica relatively late for me. I had a family dinner, so I haven't had a full week to process what's going to happen next week. But this is what I was thinking about. So my thought is I'm going to have a sled on one side of the field with 2 45s on it. And this is like basically at a goal line. At the 50, I'm going to have sandbags, probably one or two sandbags. At the start of the event, I'm going to have two guys run from the goal line down to pick up sandbags. They're going to take those sandbags and put them on top of the sled that has 45s on it. They're then going to take that sled, which is also going to have all three chains attached to it, and drag that sled across the entirety of the field. So now the sled's going to have the sandbags on it. They're going to drag that sled across the entirety of the field. And one of the stipulations is going to be that I'm not going to allow them to change the way the chain is oriented on the sled. Whatever way I set it up, I think it's going to be one giant string of chains. It's going to have three chains, maybe four. It's going to be this long chain. They have to pull that thing to the 50. Then they're going to have to turn it around, and bring it back to where it started from. If the bag falls off at any point, they have to stop and put the bag back on it. When the sled gets all the way back to the start point, they have to take the bags off and run them down to the other side of the field. That's what I'm thinking of doing. My rules will be that only two people can go at a time. That means two people can sprint for the bags, two people can sprint back with the bags, two people can drag the sled. That will be my rule. Only two people can go at a time. You can't have seven people dragging the sled. And that everybody has to go at least once during this one leg or the other. I'm still thinking this through. Might be more bags, might be more weight. I'm not 100% sure. I'm thinking it through, but in general, that's what this challenge is going to look like. Now, guys may say, Coach, what's the point of you telling us the challenge? If it's not even the finalized challenge, how are we supposed to strategize? Well, too bad. In the typical Vince McMahon fashion, it's my game. My rules. But these are the rules. It's going to be something. I'm not going to drastically change the challenge unless I think somebody's going to get hurt or it's unsafe or something infinitely more exciting comes up in my head between now and then. But that is it. All right, people. That is your 6-Minute Monday. Go attack your week. Bye. This episode is brought to you by Zero Shoes, a company that is perfectly named. Why? Because when you're wearing their shoes, you feel like you're walking around completely and totally barefoot. AKA, like you're not wearing any shoes. AKA, like you are wearing zero shoes. Now, we've all heard the benefits of barefoot training, but who wants to walk into a gym without any shoes on your feet? First of all, it's gross, and second of all, it's disgusting. Now, the other benefits of zero shoes is not only are they functional, but they're also fashionable. So, you've seen many a time people walk in the gym with these minimalist shoes and they look like a freak, not with zero shoes. You're going to blend right in. Also, they have a wide toe box so that your toes are not all scrunched together in the front like they normally are with any standard training sneaker or cleat. Now, to get your shoes, go to zeroshoes.com/go/MahoneyAT. Again, that's zeroshoes.com/go/MahoneyAT. And that zero is spelt with an X. It is X-E-R-O. Again, I'll say it again. It's X-E-R-O. Get your zero shoes today.